Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to Deeper. It is such a joy to be back again this week. I'm Austin Slater, and this is our 27th episode of Deeper, if I've got that written down right. And I'm excited to be here again, and I'm super excited, as always, to have Dan back here. Dan, thank you so much for coming back.
Of course. Yeah, good to be with you, Austin. Looking forward to another conversation.
Keep putting up with all my questions. I'm very impressed.
Good questions. You always push me well, too. So.
Oh, good. Well, this week we talked a little bit about Samson's story, especially the end of the Samson story. Could you just give us a quick summary of the sermon to refresh our memories?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Samson story, an interesting one, covers almost about 20% of the book of Judges, so a good chunk of that book. And Samson's such an interesting character in the story of Scripture. But we've been making our way through the Old Testament, so we're in Judges now and looking at Samson. As you said, we focused on just the last act, as it were, as he's there captured by the Philistines and takes down their temple along with many of the Philistines there. But we kind of looked at his whole life and just how he was emblematic of God's people, chasing after foreign gods, not really wanting to live into the identity they had, and yet God willing to work through Samson and doing so in pretty incredible ways at times, despite the flaws of his character. So we talked about the temptations that we still have to conform to culture. That's just there. We kind of use the image of even the superheroes we see now. I had a picture up of Spider-Man kind of leaving his outfit in the trash there, and just, yeah, we kind of want to be normal at times, and that's a very real thing. How are we becoming too much like culture versus seeking to, you know, be a witness to God's kingdom in the midst of it? But also seeing, yeah, the wonderful good news about who the Lord is and his faithfulness that overcomes our unfaithfulness, his willingness to work with broken vessels like ourselves and Samson, and, yeah, the victory that the Lord wins over the evil one too. So, yeah, lots of good things, and we're going to go into a few other things here, but it is a wonderful story. I'd encourage anybody to just go read through Judges 13 to 16. There's so many things there and details that we tend to forget.
And especially, I think, as adults, because like that's one of the first Bible stories I remember learning as a kid. Mm-hmm. And you know, you talk about a lot as a kid, and then you're like, oh yeah, I know the Samson story. And then every time I've gone back and revisited, I'm like, that's very interesting. Yeah. Never noticed that before.
In a lot of aspects, right? Sometimes it's just about his birth. We forget about that and the angel visit there. And sometimes it's, you know, the violence, the things he does. You're like, oh, that's very descriptive.
A bit excessive. And, you know, yeah. And it's just like he killed how many people?
Right.
In
this way, right? And yeah, lots of things. And just even the whole riddle piece with his wedding initially. So yeah, there's a lot of very interesting stories as part of that.
There is. And I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of cultural context for this, especially this last little act. So when he's imprisoned now by the Philistines, they're throwing this big party, and you said that they were throwing it in honor of Dagon. And I just thought that was very interesting because there's not usually a ton of detail given to us in Scripture. So when there is, it's kind of significant. So I was just wondering if you could explain a bit, like, who was the god Dagon in that context, and why is it so significant that he was mentioned by name here? Was it kind of something like with Moses and the plagues, you know, corresponding to each of the Egyptian gods, or what's up with that?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? There's not too often where a specific another god of the culture is named. Of course, Baal or Baal, however you want to say it, is one that comes up a lot in the Old Testament, but Dagon comes up a couple times. It's interesting that the Philistine people were not from that region, at least as far as we can tell. They came more from the Aegean Sea across the Mediterranean, came down, however that took place, and came into this region of Canaan. And it seems like they adopted Dagon, was already a god of that region, and the Philistines took that on because we see Dagon mentioned in some other cultural writings from that region. We don't know exactly maybe what area of life that Dagon was connected with. It seems more than likely, at least nowadays, we think probably with grain and with harvest. And of course, that would have been a huge part. It's still a huge part of life, thinking about how we eat every year, but especially in an agricultural kind of setting.
So could that maybe be part of why Samson was chained up grinding the grain, was kind of in service to Dagon?
Sure. It's kind of interesting to think about that. It's certainly, I think, even if it was kind of subconscious, speaks to our God's better than your God. We're going to make you do the service of our God, you know, grind up the grain. And that would have been very low work. This was kind of the lowest kind of things. You're taking the place of an animal in some respects, right, doing that. And so I think there is some connection. And then as we think about what happens, and they're kind of lauding Dagon and the victory they've given been given over Samson, and then what happens with Samson bringing the temple down, bringing the house down, as we say, on the people there and on Dagon as well. It's his temple, shows the victory of the Lord also. So there is that polemical, the spiritual battle. We think right away of the Israelites versus the Philistines, but also the spiritual battle that's kind of always going on behind that too.
Yeah, well, and we were kind of talking about this in between last week's episode and this week's episode, but correct me if I'm wrong, but the one other main time we hear about Dagon is another crumbling of his temple, and that's with the Ark of the Covenant. Is that right?
Yes, yes. So at one point, the Philistines capture the Ark of the Covenant from the Israelites and take it kind of as a trophy of war, right? This is in 1 Samuel. Put it there in the temple of Dagon, but then they come back the next morning and find, you know, that Dagon's fallen over, right? Almost like he's bowing before the Lord, as it were. And then they eventually send the ark back because plagues start breaking out amongst the Philistines. But there's another picture there of the power of the Lord versus any other god. Like you said, with the Egyptian plagues too, part of the message.
I just find it fascinating that both times Dagon is specifically mentioned that I'm aware of, it's both in the context of, and he quite literally crumbles. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there's so much that someone could pull out of that who spends like a lot of time researching that. I know that's not necessarily your specific area of study, but I just thought that was interesting to highlight for sure.
Oh, that message comes through, though, like you said. One of the passages that is often noted in connection with the Samson story, especially the end, is Ephesians 6, the closing verses of that letter that talk about spiritual armor and putting on the armor of God. And so there's not just a, you know, flesh and blood battle that we often think about, and we're talking about wars going on in that regard right now, but there's this spiritual battle. And that reminds us, this naming of Dagon in this text with Samson reminds us that this is going on. And even when Jesus many years later would say, you can't serve both God and mammon, he could have just said money or possessions, but he names that in a different way, and it reminds us it's not just the paper or coin monies that's the problem. It's the spiritual reality going on behind. And so, yeah, it's good that you kind of brought that out, named that piece of it, because this is real. God's saying, you know, it's not just, you know, I can have this strong guy who can take down a temple. It's I'm stronger than these other gods. Right. I'm the true God.
Yeah, so just really, really interesting. And I appreciated also your kind of pointing out Samson as almost taking on a superhero role, because in a lot of ways, when you look at it, yeah, he super is. Like, he does all these crazy feats of superhuman strength. Yeah. It's one of those things, like, if we were looking at this story outside of a Christian context, we'd be like, yeah, that's like Hercules or Gilgamesh, right. Like another one of these legendary figures in the Christian mythology.
Right.
Is almost how you'd look at it. And he is so fascinating because, and we kind of talked about this on Sunday, he is the superhero in that, you know, he's dedicated, his in theory at least, his life is dedicated to Yahweh. Mm-hmm. He's doing all these things against the Philistines. You know, there's that time he picks up the entire gate of the city. And, like, he's doing all these things that are, you know, helping the children of Israel. And that at that time, you know, they're constantly at war with the Philistines. Also, he's kind of breaking every single vow he can possibly break, it seems, constantly, constantly, constantly. And, you know, we talked about that a little bit. I was just wondering how we did talk about this a little more, but I was wondering if we could go into a bit more detail about how the Israelites might have looked on him. Is this kind of like one of these, like, yay, you know, what's with that?
Yeah, an uncomfortable alliance. I think that's right when you look at the story. I mean, Samson, like you said, he's fighting against the Philistines, but he's also literally in bed with them, as we see throughout the story as well. He's got all these Philistine women that he's going after and having relationships with. And yeah, there's a story, I think it's in chapter 15, when the Israelites literally hand him over to the Philistines. So they tie him up, and Samson's kind of, yeah, go ahead and tie me up, because he knows he's going to break out of that. He knows the Philistines are no match for his strength that he has in the Lord. But isn't it odd that they're like, we're going to send you over because you're causing more trouble for us is really right. The message there. You've kind of upset them by doing this, and so we're going to turn you in, which is reminiscent of what happens with Jesus, where even his own people end up, you know, turning him in, essentially. Even when Pilate, the Roman ruler, wants to just be done with it, they press it forward. So it was, you know, an uncomfortable alliance there. And like you said, Samson, what do you do with this guy? I mean, like you said, he's doing things, and sometimes you're like, wow, glad he's on our side. And other times, this is just like an out-of-control weapon almost.
Right.
You know, he's gone rogue, and it seems like. He's just whatever comes to mind. He's burning places down. He's burning up fields. He's tearing gates off city walls. And, I mean, this guy's just out of control. So
right.
If you think about associations in our own lives, and sometimes you're like, I'm going to steer clear of this person. They're just a wild card. I mean,
yeah.
That's kind of Samson in so many ways. And even at the end somewhat, he's you know, I just want vengeance one more time. He's just kind of lives out of his emotions in some ways. So
yeah. Another kind of question I've got, looking at how this story relates to the New Testament. We talked a little bit between the weeks about how this kind of sets the stage for, it's kind of like a pre-crucifixion story in a way. Could you just talk a little bit about what we can learn looking at this story with a crucifixion mindset and perspective?
Yes. Yeah. There is a lot of connections between this story and what happens with Jesus. Now, I think the mistake we can make is to make Samson into some wonderful hero.
He's very clearly not.
Exactly. Right. We got to acknowledge his brokenness. Even at the end in this text that we read, he's very selfish. It's all about him. There's no even mention of the Israelites and helping them. It's all about him and wanting to get back at the Philistines. Nevertheless, we can't ignore the connections with Jesus' ministry and his story. We said even, you know, the angel announcement of his birth, of course, that happens with Jesus. This even the Nazarene connection, you know, that goes on in Jesus' life. But being turned in by his own people, we just mentioned that. And, of course, even this last scene with Samson, spreading his arms right and left on the pillar and kind of pushing out is very reminiscent of someone who's on a cross with their arms spread out that way. And, of course, even in Samson's death, he achieves victory for God's people and shows the power of the Lord Jesus even more so. So, yeah, you see all these connections. And I think, you know, one thing I listened and appreciated, too, about Tim Keller over the years is his gospel ties. And he would look at a story like Samson and point to Jesus and say, Jesus is the greater Samson, right,
yeah.
who goes willingly to the cross where Samson had to be captured, right?
And right. Well, and Samson, you know, he saved Israel from that specific room full of Philistines and Jesus saving us from all of sin and that greater thing. I think that's a really interesting parallel that we can find there.
Or how Samson, the Lord says, begins to deliver the people, but Jesus completes that. He begins it and ends it, right? He's the A to Z,
yeah.
Brings that. And we're kind of still in the waiting for that, which is also good when you think about the Samson story, where he began, you know, this, you know, the rooftop collapses, all these leaders are taken out, but they're still fighting with the Philistines. David kind of finally brings that to completion. But in a sense, we're still waiting for Jesus' return when he'll come with the hosts of heaven and strike the final blow, as it were, to the enemy. But we can be assured that as it's been begun, God will carry it to completion. So there's a ton of good parallels there.
So much good to pull from that. And what, man, one of the things I was super encouraged by was something, one of those things that stuck out to me this time, you know, hearing this and reading through this passage that hadn't always stuck out in the past was looking at how Samson was mentioned, you know, in the Hall of Faith. We talked about that at the end, and how he was mentioned not for, you know, what he did, but for how God's strength was highlighted through his weakness, and how he was redeemed in that sense. And I just thought that was really cool, especially given all of the discussion and experience a lot of people have these days with the deconstruction conversation. You know, a lot of us have had folks who have deconstructed their faith, walked away from the faith, and not reconstructed that. And you look at Samson, and a lot of his story seems to be that deconstructing, walking away, doing everything, you know, living according to the world. But then at the very end, God still comes in and says, no, I'm going to redeem this. I'm going to redeem you. I'm going to redeem your story and your testimony into one that can be included here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was wildly encouraging to those of us who have friends who have, or family or close people who have taken that step away and have not yet come back. You know, there's a hope we can pull from that story. Is that a valid encouragement to find from there, or am I missing something?
No, I think so. Even, you know, for our own stories, right? The hopefulness, because, you know, even if we're trying to walk in faith, sometimes we can get down just on our own mistakes and sins and patterns we fall into that aren't good. Let alone, yeah, we have people we know, all of us, I think, that maybe grew up in the faith that have wandered away, or just maybe keep the faith at least at arm's length, let alone people who have never believed. And to see the hope of this is why Jesus has come, right? This is who God is. Again, we said it yesterday, if God wasn't willing to work with broken people, he wouldn't be working with anybody, right? This wouldn't be a story at all. And to see Samson, you know, really as you go throughout his life, he has in time in chapter 15 when he cries out to the Lord, but his most poignant expression of faith is this prayer at the very end in his kind of lowest moment. And sometimes some of us need to be humbled to have those kind of weak times before we really, yeah, can turn back to the Lord and see that he's there. He continues to be there and he redeems. And some of us maybe need something else. So I think you're right. There's a hope there. You know, even as we look at our lives, and it can be messy too, like Samson's, to know that, yeah, God's not calling us to be perfect in our faith because Jesus is the perfecter of our faith. Mm-hmm. But he is calling us to trust him and to look to him and receive that. So there is, I think, a hope as you think about relationships you have, our own lives too.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was fascinating, you know, and you pointed this out, but looking at the, like, while he was in prison, his hair started to grow back. And looking at how God continually kept up his side of the bargain. God was faithful all the time that Samson was not. And I just thought that was a great reminder for us, I think.
I know, I love that. It's just, the writer part of me just loves, I could feel like the joy of the author, like putting just that note in, like, or you could picture it in a movie scene now where, you know, Samson's going through all this and then they just zoom in on his head and somehow they show that the hair is kind of getting longer, right?
Yeah.
And just like, just when you think the enemy's winning again, right? And think of Dagon's head as day, or, you know, fill in the blank today, right? Seems like the forces of evil, you know, are triumphing. No, God's still faithful. He's still the all-powerful one. He's still in control. And despite, yeah, Samson didn't do anything to deserve God continuing to be with him or his hair growing back, and yet there he is. There's the Lord. He's the faithful one. He's true to his word. And so that's such an encouragement to me too. If I look in the mirror too much, I get hopeless.
Right.
But when I'm setting my thoughts and mind on things above, on the Lord, hope returns, right? Mm. It's he's dependable.
Yeah.
It's
so good. Well, was there anything else that you'd like to talk about now that we didn't really get to talk about on Sunday? Anything you'd like to highlight? Or
I think, and we said this at the outset too, so much of this message for me from on my side, like an application side, has to do with we're called to be in the world. We saw that last week with Rahab.
Right.
And to be on mission, but we're not to be of the world, right? And
mm-hmm.
So this is a warning in that regard. Samson, you know, was falling into the temptations, and so was all of God's people in a lot of ways. So maybe personally, and if you're listening for yourself too, where are our temptation points to kind of take on the identity of the world, to just say, oh, I just want to be like everybody else? You know, I think it changes over life for me in certain ways. When I was younger especially, I just wanted to be cool, right? And that meant whatever was cool in the culture. So that's like, oh, this kind of activity, you know, maybe it's, you know, cigarettes, maybe it's, you know, drinking, maybe it's things I talk, the way I talk about other people to make fun of them, you know. As I've gotten older, it might just be trying to be cool in a different way. Maybe it's with possessions.
Sure.
Maybe it's that kind of status, wanting to be seen as important in an earthly way. Through status
that
and that.
Successism that we've talked about.
Yes,
past.
Yeah. And these are just, this is me kind of personally naming some things I know are tempting for me, but there could be a lot of things that we just want to fit in. And depending on your culture, that can look different too. So I think that's an important warning from Samson's story and something that we regularly just need to be aware of and repenting of. Just, we have that tendency to just kind of go to the culture rather than saying, God's put us in the culture. There's always things that we see God at work at in the culture, but there's also things we know aren't of God and aren't how he's calling us to be. So that would be one just point I just would harp on again, I guess, of application.
So that's a super, super important reminder, honestly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dan, for coming back again and for sharing your wisdom and your insight. We always appreciate this. And thank you to everyone who's listening. We wouldn't be here without, or we might be here, but, you know, just the two of us talking. It's a lot more fun to have other people involved and invested. So thank you all for joining us and for going on this journey with us. And we will see you again next week.